here's where we are. We're ready to complete and will complete this morning the third part of Romans chapter 3, verses 21 through 31. And that is God's method of salvation now, the results. And there are three, and let's read it through in connection with the three points it makes. Number one, a by grace through faith salvation, one, humbles man. Romans 3, 27 and 28, reading. Where then is boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of law? Of works? No. But by a law of faith. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. And so notice he's looking at the practical application of justification by faith. It humbles man, verses 27-28. Two, it puts God in his proper place, or it glorifies God. And that's verse 29. Or is God the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since indeed God, who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through faith, is one. And we'll consider that area of glorification of God. Paul has argued up to this point that justification is by faith apart from the law. Well, someone may come to the conclusion then that the law is worthless. So, last paragraph. Do we then nullify the law through faith? May it never be. On the contrary, we establish the law. Then we'll be ready to go to Romans chapter 4. Now let's do one other thing since we're coming to the close of a first section here. We've had as the subject justification. And Paul has maintained, as does all of the New Testament, that justification is by faith and by faith only. The first thing he did in giving us that was to give a definition. We're coming now to the end of the definition of justification by faith, which is in 3, beginning with verse 21 down through 31. And we've spent many sessions defining it. We're now down to the last part of that. As soon as he finishes that, and we will do that today, perhaps this morning, as soon as he finishes that, you have chapter 4 that is sort of a parenthesis. And I don't mean parenthesis in the sense that it's unimportant, but parenthesis in that he is going to give us an illustration of justification by faith. And that is all of 4. 4, 1 through 25. And the question and the reason the illustration is brought in is this. True, we are justified by faith, as Romans teaches. But was that always the case? Has everybody from Adam been justified, if they were, by faith? Has it always been this way? And so, we'll put parenthetically, has justification by faith always been the way of salvation? And Christians will often ask that because they will say, well, what about the fact they had to make sacrifices? And if they didn't make sacrifices, they did not have a proper standing with God, or if they made the wrong sacrifice, or if they made the right sacrifice in the wrong place. And it is true in the Old Testament. You had to make the right sacrifice. You had to make it. You had to make it in the right place. You had to make it in the right way. Doesn't that mean that they were justified by making sacrifices? No. No one was ever justified by making sacrifices. And the question is, has justification by faith always been the only way of salvation? And chapter 4 of Romans says yes. And it does so in a very unique way. It does so by taking us to two key men, Abraham and David. Two outstanding men of the Old Testament, and it will begin to prove that Abraham was not saved by a sacrifice. He was justified by faith, and so was David. And so that will be the place of that. Then, the list of results of justification in a person's life are 5, 1 through 11. Now, granted, we're looking at verses 27 through 31 and calling them the results of justification, and they really are. But when you come to chapter 5, they get intensely personal. We have peace, we have joy, we have hope, and we have a listing. And we'll simply call Romans 5, 1 through 11, a list of 12 assets that we have as believers. And that's where we'll be going now in the next few weeks in terms of outline. But we're coming now down to completion of the definition, God's method of salvation, its results, and number one, it humbles man. Result one, it humbles man and puts him in his proper place. Chapter 3, verse 27 and 28. And we'll break that down into two parts, a primary question and a primary answer. First, his primary question. And the primary question starts verse 27 when it says, where then is boasting? And the first word of importance is where then. Because the little word then is just like a chain. It ties what he's about to say to what he's just said. And it's called an inferential particle. It's inferential. In other words, it introduces an inference. It introduces a conclusion. Inference or conclusion, if that word is better for you. It's a concluding particle. And it says, let me tie something to something else and link it together logically. And the word then has to have a reference. To what does it tie? Well, tie. The word therefore, or then, same idea, except therefore brings out the conclusion idea a little more. Tie therefore to faith in the preceding verse. So that the preceding verse has said, verse 26, for the demonstration, I say, of his righteousness at the present time, that he might be just and the justifier of the one, now catch this, who has faith in Jesus. Where then, therefore, in the light of salvation by faith, is boasting? So the idea is, if it is by faith, what are we to conclude with regard to boasting? And the word boasting is self-explanatory, really, in English, but a couple of things about the Greek word. Greek words have different endings, like M-A or like S-I-S, sis. And the is words, which boasting is, kake, sis, always refers to the act. Not the concept of pride, the act of boasting. So he's not saying then, where then is pride? Because pride's an attitude. And he's not talking about an attitude, though an attitude is there. He says, where is the possibility of the act of boasting? Or the act of self-congratulation? Self-congratulation is the idea of boasting. So then, primary question. Verse 27. Where, in the light of salvation by faith, where then is self-congratulation? How can you participate in the act of self-congratulation since it is by faith? And to that, Paul gives his primary answer. And his primary answer is in one single word. It is excluded. Now, a couple of things about the word is excluded, because it is a very forceful term. First of all, it is an aorist. And that means I'm not talking about a process. It is not excluded gradually. It's not shut out step by step. It's not an over and over process. It is an event. It's not a process, an event. Now, let me give you a couple of things that I don't think we've ever set down about the Greek aorist tense that is used many, many times in the New Testament. It does three things. It may have a summarizing force. It may have a summarizing force. In other words, it's simply saying, where is the act of boasting? Let me put it all together in one expression. Let me summarize it. It's excluded. An aorist may also have a decisive force. I think here it's got all three, and that's why I'm giving all three to you. And third, it may have a final force. Now let me make that real easy. Summarize and put it in idioms that we all use. If it has a summarizing force, how would we express that in idiomatic English? You're starting to buy a house or a car, and eventually you're going to want to have well fixed in your mind the whole transaction, all summed up, and you're going to ask, well, now, what is the what? Bottom line? Summarizing force is simply saying, this is bottom line. And Paul is saying, in the light of salvation by faith, and by faith alone, where then is boasting? Here's the bottom line. It is excluded. It also has a decisive force. I want you to stop. You're speaking to a child. I want you to stop your complaining now, or better yet, here and now. Decisive force is here and now. No more discussion. It's settled. It's finished. It's complete. And Paul is saying, if salvation is by faith and faith alone, where is boasting? It is excluded here and now. Final force. I want you to put that thing away and stop using it once for all. Now, all of those ideas are involved. And you might want to keep them because they're so simple. Is that in the Greek language, there is a way of saying bottom line in a verb. A way of saying here and now in a verb. And there's a way of saying once and for all in a verb. And therefore, verse 27 is very forceful. Where then, in the light of salvation by faith, is self-congratulation? It is over once and for all. It is finished here and now. This is the bottom line. It is excluded. And therefore you have the divine method for dealing with human pride. And notice our first point in the results of justification by faith is that it humbles man. Now, in order to get that across, Paul senses that someone out there may be saying, well, and Paul says, let me anticipate that you've got a question mark in your head. And let me give you then now two other things. Let me give you a reaffirming question followed by a reaffirming answer. And now, reaffirming question. And that goes with verse 27, last part of the verse. By what kind of law? Notice we're still with questions. By what kind of law? Of works? But by a law of faith. And so he's going to have a reaffirming question, and then he's going to have a reaffirming answer. So he goes, punch, punch. And when we're finished with punch, punch, he goes, punch, punch again, just to be sure we got the point, and the point is made. Faith excludes pride. And that's what Paul is drumming at in this particular section. Now, when he says in 27, by what kind of law, what does the word law mean? And let me explain it by giving you some principles or some synonyms for it. Law may mean a principle. And if you read in the verse, does that make sense? Verse 27. By what kind of principle law or works. So law may mean principle. It may mean method. Pride is excluded by what?
Law.
What method? Or, another synonym, pride is eliminated, question, by what system is it eliminated? Or, by what rule is it eliminated? And I use the multiple words in order to get the concept across. And you grab the one that gets the idea across to you. By what principle is pride excluded? What method of dealing excludes it? What system excludes it? What rule excludes it? And therefore, reading in verse 28 or 27, where then is boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of principle? What system? Now, possible answers of works. Will works eliminate this? Well, to that we get his reaffirming answer. This is the kind of argument where you feel like the point is man-made, but you really want to seal it up. And Paul is coming along and saying, I know you understand what I've just said, but can we review it? And can I review it by asking you a question? And so in the answering of the question, you reaffirm what I've just told you. You don't want to say in this context that Paul is saying, well, someone out there is fighting me. He's just saying, I want to be a good teacher. And I've shown that the principle of faith excludes any possibility of pride. You've got that in your mind. Now, I want to drill you. Now, what law does that? Or I can put it this way. Now, once again, let me say it this way. What principle excludes pride? Works? And they all said no. Not works. And then he comes on with his reaffirming answer and drills it home one more time. And that is... last sentence on verse 27. No, but by the principle or the law of faith. And let's simply think of it this way. In the reaffirming answer, he gives it short form and then long form. Short form is 327b. Short form simply says, no, but by a law of faith. Then he'll come along in verse 28 and give us the same answer, long form, or longer form, which is the whole verse. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. So notice, short form answer, long form answer comes into context. Now let's make some columns and make a comparison of justification by works versus justification by faith, and compare the differences. Now, each one of these will start with justification by works, and we'll give some features of it. And then in the other column, justification by faith, and we'll give results of that. Number one, justification by works is introspection or introspective. It looks at you. Justification by faith is extrospective. It looks outside of you. We talk about someone being an introvert. Means they're not outgoing, they're ingoing. And when you compare these two systems, and that's what Paul is doing here, if it's by works, you're introspective. Every person has had a difficulty with that, have you not? Because you've thought of your relationship with God, and you immediately looked at yourself. And when you looked at yourself, you said, no way. I can't be one that has fellowship with God, because look at me. That's because you're over here on the wrong column. You're working in the justification by works column, and that's introspective. Justification by faith doesn't look within, it looks without. Justification by works is self-congratulating. Run out of space there, but nonetheless, you get the idea. It's self-congratulating. Justification by faith is self-renouncing. All up and down the line, they're different. Justification by faith renounces my merit. Justification by works congratulates my merit. Justification by works looks to self. Justification by faith looks outside of self. These are all close. Justification by works looks at what I have done. Justification by faith looks at what God has done. Every point, all up and down the line, there's a difference. And it's a night and day difference. Therefore, justification by works founds its grounds is human. Justification by faith, the grounds are divine. Now, I'm not saying that every one of these is different. These are just facets of a very similar thing, but we go over the facets in order to put nails in the case to make sure we understand what is there. Justification by works glorifies man. Justification by faith glorifies God. It appears that justification by faith and by works are two rather opposite things. Totally opposite. There couldn't be a heavier line down the middle than that. Justification by works results in a man-centered life. Justification by faith results in a God-centered life and thought process and mental attitude. And by life, I mean conduct, I mean thought, I mean attitude, everything that there is about it. And thus, coming to 28, we maintain that a man is justified by faith without the works of the law. Okay, let's stop and make a couple of observations here. Three. One, faith system eliminates pride. If you see spiritual pride anywhere, it's because grace has been forgotten. It eliminates pride. And I'll put parenthetically under faith, that is salvation by grace. Grace deals with mental attitude of pride, always. And in the measure that we glory in our efforts is the measure that we dishonor God. To glory in man is to dishonor God. Think at this point of a teeter-totter. You can't make one end go up without the other end going down. It is impossible. And the same is true in doctrine. You cannot glorify man without dishonoring God. As God is honored, man is seen in his proper place. It's a teeter-totter. To glorify God is to recognize man in his proper place, which is we appropriate by faith and we get things from God on a grace basis. That is tremendously important. Second, and let's take this out of verse 22 and 26, since we've talked about justification by faith, we need to remind ourselves that the whole value of faith is its object. Notice verse 22. Even the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus. Notice the object. Verse 26. For the demonstration, I say, of his righteousness at the present time, that he might be just and justifier the one who has faith in Jesus. Notice in each case, the object is attached. So the value of faith is its object. And he has emphasized that two times, in 3:22 and in 3:26. So So when we talk about justification by faith, keep in mind that that faith always has a valid object. And the only object of justification by faith is the person of Christ and the person of Christ alone. Third, since we are saved by grace and apart from any works, then we conclude something about faith. Faith is a meritless act. Faith is a meritless act. Let me make a statement. The Bible says we are saved by faith. It says we are saved through faith. It says we are saved of faith. But it never says we are saved because of faith. Very important. By, through, and of. But never because of. If we were saved because of faith, then you would have a problem with merit. But that never occurs. As a matter of fact, there's a way of saying it. The word for faith is pistis. And you look up in any grammar, and it will say this. That whenever you have the word faith in the accusative case, it means because of something. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. I'll trace out in the New Testament the word faith and see if it's ever in a construction that means, it would be, if you that are fans or know the language, dia pisten. That would be accusative case, and that would mean because of faith. And I searched and searched, and that doesn't even occur. Nowhere. Nowhere does it say we are saved because of faith. Why? Faith is a meritless act. Through faith, it can be the hand that takes it. It's the way of appropriation, but it's not the cause of salvation. God saves, but He does through the channel of faith. And this is very important. It is not a meritless act. Now, again, just to give some things that will stick in your mind. Salvation by achieving equals pride. Salvation by believing equals proper humility and standing with God. So notice coming out of, does what we believe affect our attitude? Well, I should say so. If you believe that it is by faith, your attitude has changed. And you suddenly begin to look around and say, what do I have to be proud of? And we have nothing to be proud of, then why should we be proud? And a grace attitude begins to emerge. And this is all salvation by believing. You might want to say, equals grace attitude toward people. Have you ever been around supposedly Christians that don't have a grace attitude? You're scared to death that you're not dressed right. You didn't say things right. You didn't. You halfway through the meal and say, oh, we forgot to pray. And you can just sense that they're over there making comments about your failure to pray. And all of that sort of thing. What is all of that? It's all a non-grace attitude. A gracious attitude makes a person that is easy to get along with. If you understand grace, then you can be gracious. And it's impossible. It's one of the great circuses of the 20th century among evangelical Christians. Christians trying their best to be gracious who don't understand grace. And it's a show. It's a parade. It's a facade of slap on the back and all of that sort of thing. And it means nothing but because it does not come from the proper grace attitude, which is a heart matter. Okay. Now, next point. It puts man in his proper place. And now secondly, it glorifies God. Now, notice when you come down to verse 29, you begin with the word or. And or is sort of the anticipation of an objection. Not a big one, but sort of a... I kind of know what you're thinking out there, and I need to say this. Or, And he may be thinking that some of them are sitting there saying justification by faith. That's fine for most people. But me, I am religious or I am a Jew, and I have a special place. So verse 29 is designed to level man and thus glorify God. Is God the God of the Jews only? In other words, the anticipation with the word or has been this justification by faith doesn't apply to everybody, does it? Paul says it certainly does. Or is he the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since, indeed, God who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through the faith is one. So it glorifies God in this sense. He is the only God who saves only one way. He is the only God who saves only one way, and it applies to everyone. It applies to all. And therefore, if he is the only God who justifies, and he's the only one that justifies only one way, then this applies to everybody, and the glory goes to him. Third, it confirms the law. And I would say this verse comes in, and notice in your translation, it's listed as a separate paragraph. You got the paragraph marker before verse 31. And the listing of a separate paragraph simply means that our translators thought, well, how does this fit? All of a sudden, verse 31, do we then nullify the law through faith? And many commentators will make the remark that we don't understand where Paul's coming from at this point. Well, it doesn't seem that complex to me. What has he said about the law? He has said something about the law previously. Law-keeping has nothing to do with justification. It does not justify. And he said that in verse 21. But now, apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been manifested. He said it in 27. Where is then boasting? It's eliminated by the law of faith, not by keeping the law. Now, can you see the conclusion that he does not want us to come to? Law-keeping does not justify, therefore, the law is worthless. And can you see how a reader might come to that? I can't have a standing with God by the law. I can't be justified by the law. Then what do you need the law for? It's worthless. And Paul says, no, no, that's the wrong conclusion. Don't go in that direction, because, verse 31, do we then nullify the law through faith? No. May it never be. On the contrary, we establish it. And in what sense is it established? And that leads us to the use of the law. And the law has done two things within this context. Number one, it brings awareness of need. Let's put it this way. The law should be thought of as scales, not a ladder. It's a scales that says you weigh more than you should. It's not a ladder to go to heaven. And again, that's the way most people think in terms of salvation, as though they're climbing somewhere. Salvation by works is like erecting a ladder and climbing that ladder to get out of Missouri. You can't get out of Missouri by going up. You can get on a very high ladder. And that's basically what people do with respect to, at least in their minds, of heaven. Is that I want to get out of here and up there, and so I'll climb a ladder. And you have all kinds of ladders. Some people don't make much effort. They just put out a concrete block and they've stepped up that high. Some of them have
gone higher and had higher ladders, and they are called church people. And then there's some people who write books about everybody else should live. They're ethics professors. And they go on a very high ladder. But reach heaven by going up a ladder, you can't do it. You can't climb out of Missouri by going up a ladder. And therefore, that's a complete misuse, and that's the way most people use the law, as though it were a ladder, when it's really saying, I measure you as the scales would, and you do not meet the qualifications. So it brings awareness and need. But what else it does? It brings also the need for redemption. It shows men to be sinners, and it's because of the broken law, which carries the penalty of death, that men need to be saved or need to be redeemed. So it has an important place, but only in that respect. All right, we close at this point, at a good point to close, and we're ready now for next hour, Justification Illustrated, Romans chapter 4. Father, we're thankful once again for your word and the crisp, clear teaching of Paul on the subject of how we can have a standing with you. How could he be clearer? It is not by works of a law. It is not by being good. It is not by works at all. It is by grace, and it is through faith. And therefore, thankful this morning that we can rest on the work of Jesus Christ and say we have a standing with God because of him, in whose name we pray. Amen.